you are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
You are about to see the first public exhibition of an entirely new form of entertainment.
That belongs in a museum.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Treasury Cast, the show that celebrates the greatest comics format of all time, the Treasury Edition. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network, I'm your host, Rob Kelly. And joining me this month is my pal, Sean M. Myers. Hi, Sean.
Hey, Rob. How are you today?
I am doing great. I was shocked to learn today that you have not been on this show before.
I was shocked, too, when you told me that. I guess because we talk online about treasuries, and I was a huge, I always used to love going to the Treasury Cast website, or the Treasury website that you did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, like, you've been on so many of my shows for so many years that I just was like, okay, well, let me pull up his intro from the first episode, and I'm scrolling through all the shows. I'm like, no. No, Ryan Daly, okay, Chris Franklin, yeah, Max Romero, wait a minute. And then you've never been on Treasury Cast, so this is very exciting. You get to cross this show off your Fire and Water bingo card. We got to get you on the, we guess, like, once Kylie Minogue covers a Bob Dylan song, we can get you over on that show.
But that has literally always been in the back of my head. Like, I'm searching, and maybe, like, she covered a song that he covered, like, Six
something,
Degrees.
Something, yeah, Kylie something Dylan. We could, yeah, something we could put together there. But until that fantastical day, we're here to talk about the fantastic world of Hanna-Barbera number 3, Laugh Olympics. Because as we are recording this and as you're listening to it, the Olympics are happening. It's very exciting. I'm a big fan of the Olympics. So I thought it would be fun to do a little tie-in and talk about the sort of Marvel-esque equivalent, which is the Laugh Olympics, featuring all the Hanna-Barbera favorites. But before we get to that, Sean, I got to ask you two separate questions. First off, what is your history with the Treasury format?
I always remember being a kid, reading the comics and looking at the ads and seeing all of these ads for these amazing Treasury editions. And I always wanted them. You know, they always had, like, the back issues where they had all of the famous first editions and all of the previous ones. I do remember, like, being a kid, and it was a Sunday, and tying in with sports, I was at a football game and left the football game and went to my newsstand to get comics, but my newsstand was closed on Sundays. And I literally remember putting my face up against the glass and seeing the Super Friends Treasury.
Oh, no.
And coveting it and never getting it.
Oh, no.
The first Treasury that I ever had, like, off of the stands bought, was a limited collector's edition C51. And I'm not great with numbers either, but that's the Ra's al Ghul saga.
Yeah.
And I remember freaking out because I was still, like, a little kid. And on that cover, Robin is dead. And, like, something like that, I knew that was a big deal. And this was a big comic. So I kind of thought that that was true. Like, they were, you know, going to kill Robin. And this, I didn't even know that these were reprints. I thought this, you know, was a deluxe edition of how we're going to get rid of Robin. And I was kind of, like, upset. Now, thankfully, at the end, spoiler alert, he isn't dead, and these were old books, but I didn't know that at the time.
That's that shot of you behind the glass is, like, I just pictured, like, Star Trek II or something. He's there.
I remember, I could still, like, I can literally close my eyes and still, like, see it in there on the shelf because they were so big, they had those on the very front shelf.
Oh, that's just torture.
Now, the funny thing is, this is a Treasury story that I love. So back in, like, the early days of eBay, I would go online and try to get Treasuries, and I got, like, a couple of them. But at the time, there was a bid, there was an auction up for a lot of Treasuries, probably like a 20-issue lot of Treasuries. Wow. And at the time, it was the most I had ever spent probably like for anything in my life. And I was at a party when the auction was closing, and I literally left the party.
Wow.
So I would be home in time for the close of this auction to make sure that I got it. And I did get it.
Oh, nice. Oh, that I admire that. Did you go back to the party? Or you just went home at that point?
No, I went back to the party and said, I got it, I got it, I got the comic books out of it. And everyone around me was like, eh, yeah.
Yeah. I think we've all been there. So what were some of the books in that lot?
So I finally got my Super Friends. Mm. It was most well, the good thing is, it was a lot of the treasuries that I quote-unquote didn't care about. So stuff like Ghosts and Mystery and Tarzan, which that's one reason why I love lots, because if they have issues of stuff that I kind of don't care about, I feel better getting them in lots. And then oftentimes I'll read it and will enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, now the only thing about that lot that is kind of like a negative is I was tomahawked by that lot.
Yeah, we all know the pain of that particular treasury, Sean. So, I mean, did you get any of the Marvel ones?
Not until more recently. There was one I had as a kid growing up, and that I have no idea what the number is. It's the Spider-Man one that reprints his team-ups. It's like the X-Men and their 70s, like, street cop
Astonishing outfits. Spider-Man, yes. Number 18. Okay, yeah. It's one of my favorites.
And the big eyeball.
The orb. Yes. It's got the orb. Yeah.
Yeah. So that one I had like off of the stands when I was a kid, but that was the only Marvel treasury. I since have gone back. I'm a big Christmas fan. So I got the Christmas issues and I have one or two other ones, but I definitely would like to pick up more Marvel issues.
Very nice. You have quite a nice, I can't believe for someone with that extensive a collection and left a party to go to an eBay that you haven't been on the show before. That just seems crazy to me that we haven't had this conversation yet. So, well, that's fantastic. I mean, I would think in terms of the newsstand being closed on Sundays that Jesus would want people to get their magazines.
I agree.
I mean, come on. I mean, they want to be informed. So, okay. Well, that's fantastic. So now let's move on to the second part of this conversation, which is the Olympics. The Olympics are going on right now. Finally, the delayed Tokyo Summer Olympics. So, Sean, what is your history with the Olympics? Are you a fan of do you follow the Olympics?
Oh, my gosh. Sports, me and sports. Let me tell you how much I love sports. I love sports so much. Sports like A League of Their Own, like Rudy, like Caddyshack, the Bad News Bears. Oh, my gosh. Those are sports that I love. So, kind of truth be honest, I kind of hate sports.
You did mention going to a football game earlier, though. I guess.
Well, my brother played, and I had to go along. Gotcha. He played football. It was like rinky-dink football. Like, I was just trapped there, so I went down to the newsstand to get something to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm not a big sports fan, but I am a big spectacle fan, and I love the spectacle of the Olympics, like the opening and closing ceremonies, obviously, which Kylie Minogue performed at in Australia.
She was going to come into this at some point.
But anything like that, like it is neat to see the pageantry of that. And I love the Parade of Nations. It's very Epcot, which is very neat. So that stuff I love. And I will watch an Olympic sporting event or two. But I don't get super, super into it.
I did when I was a kid. And then when I hit my teens and my 20s, I stopped paying attention. And then at some point in my 30s, I got back into it. And I just sort of, I think I can appreciate the, part of it is the spectacle of it. It is, you know, this is on such a grand scale. But also just the idea of like these people who dedicate their whole lives for this moment. Mm-hmm. I find that really fascinating that they train, you know, some of them for years, most of them, all of them for years to get to be able to get good enough to get into the Olympics. And then you get in the Olympics and then you have to compete at this exact moment with everyone watching and you have to have the nerve and the ability and everything. And so I find myself really getting into the Olympics and watching sports that are part of the Olympics that I would never watch otherwise. You know what I mean? I don't watch swimming. I don't watch snowboarding, but when it's the Olympics, then I get really into it. So yeah, I've really become quite a big fan of it. And so I'm enjoying watching it now and seeing all the different stories and things like that. So yeah, it's some, and again, I'm not a big sports guy. I watch baseball, but other than that, I don't watch any other sports and I don't really care that much about it. But the Olympics is something I get really, really into. And so, like I said, it seemed to line up nicely that we've got the Olympics going on, right? And we were doing a Treasury cast. And then the odds are that there was, you know, not, there is another Olympics related Treasury.
Uh-huh.
Spider-Man and Hulk go to the Winter Olympics.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
we will get to, the show will get to in a couple of years when they do the Winter Olympics. But I thought it would be fun to talk about the Laugh Olympics, which of course was a TV series, a Hanna-Barbera TV series that ran for two seasons, 24 episodes in 1978. And again, it features all of the Hanna-Barbera characters competing in these ongoing games. So in a lot of ways, it's like a Crisis on Infinite Earth sort of thing where you've got all the Laugh Olympics, all the Hanna-Barbera characters together, which is not something you always saw. So that was always fun. Now, did you watch the Laugh Olympics as a show?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was a Saturday morning cartoon kid fanatic. Oh my gosh. I used to have the three network schedules memorized. and the best thing, and listeners, be prepared to have the cockles of your heart warmed, because I'm going to mention the Friday night preview,
yes,
the night before the new Saturday morning cartoons.
So exciting.
Began. Oh my gosh, that was fantastic.
I never missed that thing. Never.
I loved it.
Yeah.
And Laugh Olympics was great because it probably was like at our age at that time, it probably was like the first time, you know, like everyone, every character came together for something.
They absolutely, speaking of those Friday previews, I swear to God, I think like whatever network owns those things, they could group those on a Blu-ray and they would sell a couple of copies to nerds.
I would leave a them. Party. I would leave a party to win an eBay auction.
the ultimate sign of affection from Sean Myers is you leave a party to give. But yeah, I would totally want to see those things if they were still available. So anyway, all right. So let's talk about the Laugh Olympics, specifically this Treasury, as I mentioned. It was published in The Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera number 3, which was this only three-issue series of Hanna-Barbera-related treasuries published by Marvel back during the brief period when Marvel had the license to the Hanna-Barbera characters. We're going to talk a little bit more about that in a bit. This was published on May 30th, 1978. The story is called The Man Who Stole Thursday. It's by Mark Evanier, of course, and the artists are Scott Shaw, Dan Spiegel, Frank Smith, Owen Fitzgerald, Tony Strobel, Pete Alvarado, Joe Prince, and a name of which you and I are both familiar with, Sean, Paul Norris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I know who that is.
Why don't you explain to people who don't know who Paul Norris is, what his claim to fame is outside of doing this comic?
Aquaman.
He was the co-creator of Aquaman, along with Mort Weinziger. In fact, and if you look at any Aquaman comic now, he is the sole credited creator. So it's pretty amazing. We've got Aquaman going on it. The Aquaman co-creator here in this Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera number 3. So on the cover of this comic, it's this big red cover and you've got all the characters and it says an all-star spectacular, The Man Who Stole Thursday, The Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera, guest starring the Flintstones. So like the Flintstones were not normally in this because of course you had to contrive a way to get them involved. Obviously,
right, yeah.
Even though the Flintstones have been off the air here and there for a long time, they were still kind of like marquee names that they got their own, you know, guest starring the Flintstones kind of thing. So now the story is pretty involved. I'm going to do my best to summarize it as fast as possible. But there's a lot. Mark Evanier packs a lot into the story. So let's talk about it. At an observatory, a scientist has run some tests and come to a strange conclusion. Thursdays have gone missing. Meanwhile, Dynamutt is bringing the crook known as Mr. Mastermind to jail. A judge arranges his trial for grand larceny on a Thursday. Just then, a bailiff enters and shows the judge the paper that, thanks to a change in the Earth's rotation, Thursdays are now gone. Mr. Mastermind comes to the dubious conclusion that now that Thursdays don't exist, he cannot be held for trial and takes off. Even worse, the Laugh Olympics planned for Thursday are now also off. We then cut to Jellystone Park, where Yogi Bear, Huckleberry Hound, Wally Gator, and Top Cat are dismayed to learn that the Laugh Olympics are off. All across the world, we see the lack of Thursdays affecting Secret Squirrel, McGilla Gorilla, Peter Potamus, and more. The detectives Snooper and Blabber go to see a Professor Gizmo who has been experimenting with time. They find him tied up, and he explains that one day a mysterious hooded man named Tempest stole Gizmo's gizmo and disappeared into time itself. Eventually, everyone is involved in searching for Tempest. Scooby and Shaggy, Grape Ape, Augie Doggy, you name it. Yogi heads to the Really Rotten's training camp and enlists their help since, without the Life Olympics, they have no way to humiliate their foes. The Scooby Gang head to a Comic-Con where they actually see Tempest, but they think he's just a cosplayer. We then see Tempest take his hood off and tell the desk clerk he's there for the convention to sell some comics. Fred overhears one convention goer mention finding a 1939 comic book in unbelievably good condition, almost brand new. A chase ensues, and Dread Baron grabs Tempest's time machine. He flicks a switch, and suddenly a bunch of our HB pals are whisked away. Tempest is dumped into the Stone Age, where he runs into, of course, the Flintstones. He then whisks off into the future, just as his pursuers land back in the Stone Age, where Fred and Barty arrange their own version of the Laugh Olympics. Tempest then makes it back to the present day, where the Scooby Gang and the Blue Falcon try to find him. After he almost thrusts an innocent Jellystone picnic goer into the time stream, where he is saved by Dino Mutt, the Scooby Gang grab Tempest, and he's revealed to be Ranger Smith. But Ranger Smith looks hypnotized, and Dino Mutt finds a receiver in his ear. He amplifies the sound, and they hear the voice of Mr. Mastermind. Scooby, Dino Mutt, and Captain Caveman find Mr. Mastermind's HQ, and he reveals his real plan is to eliminate all days except August 29th, his birthday. Every day, he will be celebrated for the genius that he is. Mr. Mastermind has booby-trapped the machine, but he didn't plan on Captain Caveman simply unplugging the thing, defeated by a Neanderthal, the biggest injustice of all time. With Thursdays restored, life goes back to normal. Yogi steals some food, the Rottens plan to cheat at the Laugh Olympics again, and Snagglepuss can enjoy his Thursday night movie. Back in the Stone Age, Barney gives Bam Bam a bike as a present, a Stone Age version of the time bike he rode when Tempest showed up. Fred and Barney discuss whether the others have it better, living in the far-off future. Fred suggests they don't, since they have to deal with people who can invent a time machine and get rid of whole days. Barney agrees, and they go to see if lunch is ready. Well, whoo! that was a lot of plot. That was courtesy of Mark Evander. So, okay, overall, we're not going to break this down beat by beat because, come on, it's the Laugh Olympics. But overall, Sean, like, how did you enjoy this comic?
So anytime I'm asked to be on a podcast, I get super excited. I'm like, yeah, all right. And then when it was Laugh Olympics, I'm like, oh, that's really cool. But then I remembered, like, as a kid reading comic books based on cartoons, like, a lot of times I was, like, really disappointed because they would have like, the Pink Panther or the Roadrunner talking. Like, it just was never really – the comic was never like the show. And to a degree, the Laugh Olympics comic isn't really like the show because they don't spend a lot of time like doing games.
That was the first thing I noticed. It's like, there's not a lot of Laugh Olympics in this.
Or like visiting foreign countries or anything like that. But I am glad that they actually do have like three different like quote unquote sporting competitions, you know, like digging a hole or something like that. So I am glad that that part was included in the story. And I was really impressed with I was impressed with like how kind of like science fictiony and how like quote unquote epic adventure it is.
Yeah.
With like all of the characters time hopping and all that. So I really enjoyed this a lot more than I thought I was going to.
Yeah. I mean, if you took out the Hanna-Barbera characters, you could insert any bunch of Marvel superheroes. You know, yeah. I mean, stealing Thursdays is not that much more ridiculous or silly than anything Kang ever tried to pull off in the Avengers, you know?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. As a kid of the 80s, stealing Thursdays was horrible to me because my favorite TV show was Fame. And Fame was on Thursdays. And
no!
that would be crippling to me.
There would have been no Cheers cast if there would have been no Thursdays. It would have been terrible. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, Mark Evanier, we all know who Mark Evanier is. He's long history in TV and comic books. I mean, he's, again, one of the great like sort of writing careers because he's been doing it forever. We know that he started as an assistant to Jack Kirby. By the way, when they got to the detail where Mr. Mastermind wants to eliminate all days except August 29th, I was like, why does that date seem familiar? And then I was like, oh, I think that's Jack Kirby's birthday. Which I was like, oh, that's got to be a nod. And then I looked, no, Jack Kirby's birthday is the 28th. And I was like, okay. So I have no idea. I'm not going to bother Mark Evanier for this. I am acquainted with him. I won't say we're friends, but I'm acquainted with him. He's been very nice to me over the years when I needed information about this or that. But I wasn't going to bother him just to ask, well, it was August 29th. Why'd you pick that day? It was like, was that like the birthday of an enemy or something? It's not Mark Evanier's birthday either. So I was like, there must be some significance, but I wasn't going to bother him after, you know, 40 years. Hey, can you explain this one little detail in a Laugh Olympics comic that you wrote?
My guess is it's probably, maybe it's his birthday, because I did look up to see if any famous person, I thought maybe it was Hitler's birthday or something like that. Because as we saw in DC Special 29, Hitler tried this exact same plot.
That's right.
But it is the birthday of Michael Jackson.
Okay.
John McCain.
Okay.
Charlie Parker, the jazz musician.
Bird.
Not the DC Comics.
not Golden Eagle, no.
Hawkman, Golden Eagle, yeah. Richard Attenborough.
Okay.
Ingrid Bergman. And William Friedkin.
Okay. Well, all right. That's a lot of diverse people. All right. I don't know. Maybe Mark Evanier was friends with one of those people. but you're right. Yeah, the plot is, I mean, it's hard to write. I mean, this story is something like 48 pages. That's, yeah. I mean, that is a length that the Hanna-Barbera characters are generally never subjected to. You know, you normally write, I mean, the Flintstones were a half hour, but I mean, you take out commercials and it's like 21 minutes or whatever. So you just didn't, these characters generally didn't get put into stories with this kind of length. And so, yeah, it doesn't feel like an episode because it's so big and epic. And so, yeah, Mark Evanier finds a kind of clever way of putting them in this. I mean, Tempest with he looks like Time Trapper.
Oh, yeah.
Superheroes. I mean, again, he's really, I mean, the idea of eliminating, again, if you take out the details of saying, I'm going to eliminate all the days except my birthday, so I'm celebrated. Yeah, that's silly. But it isn't really, again, that much. You could see Lex Luthor doing something like that, too. You know, I'm going to eliminate all of the. This could have been a plot from Challenge of the Super Friends, straight up.
Well, and it's funny because if you remember, like, the Marvel paperbacks from, like, the 70s with the painted covers.
Oh, sure, yeah.
The Avengers book is The Man Who Stole Tomorrow.
Yeah, see?
And Laugh Olympics was first. Like, the Avengers book came after that. So it definitely could have, like, kicked that off in the writer's mind.
Yeah, Mark Evanier's ahead of his time. So the chapter I kind of do want to talk about the most, because it's the most fun, is got to be chapter 2, where they go to the convention.
Yep.
because, first of all, again, it's kind of ahead of its time. I mean, comic conventions were obviously a thing, but I'd say the average person did not know about them. Nowadays, right. With the San Diego Comic-Con, everybody knows about them. But in 1978, that was still kind of off the beaten path. And so to have, and obviously Mark Evanier had spent a lot of time at Comic-Cons. So to have the characters, to have the Scooby Gang go to this Comic-Con, and I believe none of the individual chapters are credited by the artists. The artists are just given a kind of a group credit in the beginning. But you can discern some stylistic differences in the art. I'm pretty sure that this chapter is drawn by Dan Spiegel. Because it just looks like his work more than some of the other artists. And get it, some of these people I'm not that familiar with, but this looks very, this has more humans in it.
Right.
And so to me, this feels more like Dan Spiegel. And I really like all the little gags that Evanier throws in, because obviously this is something from, you know, someone who spent a lot of time at a Comic-Con, because the Scooby Gang walks in and, you know, you got Shaggy saying, these people all look normal, more or less. And then you've got somebody saying, I only need 3 more issues of Adequate Adventure to complete my set. Have you seen the prices on those lately? If you ask me, Jerry Sloan is the only artist to draw Blue Scarab. You know, I mean, these are really the kinds of conversations that you hear at Comic-Cons. And you see people in cosplay, which, again, kind of ahead of the curve a little. And then you've got Blue Falcon showing up with Dino Mutt. And then they go to this collector, and he's talking about you want to buy something, make a good deal on the first issue of Mediocre Mystery, as he's sitting there counting his cash. He's got the style of comics. I mean, I was like, yeah, this is pretty accurate.
In my notes, I have, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I think that whole chapter is really fun. And I love, in terms of the artwork, and again, we'll have some of the pages up on the website, firewaterpodcast.com. The final page of that chapter where the really rottens press the time button and they send a bunch of the characters back into time. And that leaves Blue Falcon and Dino Mutt stranded you know, on in our present day, so he can't follow where our characters are going. But there's this shot of like as the sun's going down.
Oh yeah,
and it's like that is. I mean, again, that's a panel. If Blue Falcon had been in sort of quote unquote regular superhero comics, that's a panel you could have you just redraw it a little, and it looks like a panel out of a Batman comic.
I agree. Yeah, and I was like, and I know this is a Hanna-Barbera book, but like the use of shadows. Yeah. And the color of the sunset, it is really good. Really good.
Yeah. It was and I was like, wow, okay. And they're really, I guess because Blue Falcon, just being by who he is probably a little more capable than some of the other characters than, say, you know, Quick Draw McGraw. So it's easier just to leave him out of the story while you have everybody else put through their paces. Now, back when we get to the Stone Age is when we get our real only section of Laugh Olympics, where they go into these games. And it's, you know, obviously it's a bit on the contrived side because it's sort of like all these characters are here. They follow they follow Tempest, and then he disappears. And, you know, then we have Huckleberry Hound and Top Cat are here and Wally Gator. And they kind of have nothing to do. So, and they're like, oh, we're missing the Laugh Olympics. And so Fred is like, oh, let's have our own Laugh Olympics. Which are like, what? Why are we doing this? But, it's a kid's cartoon. You can't get too upset about it.
Well, absolutely. The loss of Snagglepuss is felt here.
Is he your favorite?
Probably.
Okay. So, yeah. I mean, it really does manage to fit in as many of the characters as possible. And they all kind of get a little bit of character bits. I love at the end of the story where Mr. Mastermind has got this huge plan. He's got this whole machine and he's like, I've booby-trapped it and there's nothing you can do. And Captain Caveman just unplugs it. Because he's a caveman, I mean, you know, he just goes with the simplest explanation. I thought that was funny. And so I said, it's really quite charming. Again, I don't know if 48 pages is maybe the best format in the world for this kind of story, because it's just maybe it's a little too long. But overall, if you're a Hanna-Barbera fan, I think, and if, especially if you were a little kid, like this would be really special because, again, how many times do you get to see everybody thrown in like this?
Well, and when I started reading the book, I kind of thought it was going to be probably like three stories.
Right.
In this, because I mean, a lot of treasuries, that's what they are. They're just reprints of story. Yeah. I thought this was going to be three stories from the Laugh Olympics book.
Right. Right. Because there was a Laugh Olympics, Marvel put out a whole bunch of Hanna-Barbera regular size comics. And I think, and one of them was Laugh Olympics. And yeah, I thought maybe they're going to be reprints, but no, these are all original stories. And speaking of that, I found this great bit on Mark Evanier's website, newsfromme.com, where he talks about this very book. And so I wanted to quote this because it's really interesting, the backstory of this. So he mentions, he wrote this several years ago, but here he's talking about Laugh Olympics. And he says, I edited and wrote comics for Hanna-Barbera several years in the 70s, some published in America by Marvel, others printed in various editions around the world, rarely in English. We had done two big treasury editions for Marvel, a Flintstones Christmas special, which Chris Franklin and I covered actually a couple of years ago, and a Yogi Bear Easter book. The folks in Marvel decided they didn't want a third one, so we didn't do a third one. Then a few months later, they called up and said, did anyone tell you we want a third one? I said, no, nobody told me you want a third one. When do you want a third one and what do you want in it? The person who called me referred to a schedule that had been printed up many weeks before, but had no one had bothered to send me, the guy who had to edit and write this third treasury. He said, according to this, it's a Laugh Olympics summer special and we need it, .. And here he mentioned a date that was less than a month off, a little more than 3 weeks, as I recall. To assemble a 48-page comic book, 52 with covers, in that space of time, to get it written, penciled, lettered, inked, colored, and shoved through the production process was utterly impossible. So naturally, I said we'd do it. I wrote the script in two nights, structuring it so I could divvy up the pages between many artists, more than three, and have several working on it simultaneously. Various pages were drawn and or inked by Owen Fitzgerald, Frank Smith, Scott Shaw, Dan Spiegel, Joe Prince, Paul Norris, Pete Alvarado, and me. Bruce Berry lettered the insides. I laid out and lettered the cover, which was drawn by Willie Ito and Scott Shaw. Carl Gafford colored the whole thing in a lot less time than he should have been given for the job. And somehow, we not only got it done, but had it in on the exact date I was told it had to be in. I was rather proud. Not that it's the greatest comic ever done, or even the greatest I'd done, but I thought it was a darn good, given the amount of time we had to do it in. 2 weeks later, someone at Marvel called to ask a production question about it, and I made the sound of Scooby-Doo going, "Ruh?" And I said, I thought that book went to the printer 2 weeks ago. And of course, since I had yet to learn how often it works like this, I was surprised when the person said, oh no, we may have given you that deadline, but it doesn't ship until next month. In other words, I had plenty more time and hadn't really had to cut all the corners I'd cut and hadn't had to nag artists over relentlessly to get everything done ASAP. We then did two more HB Treasury editions, a Scooby-Doo Halloween book, and another Flintstones Christmas special at a more human pace. But before they saw print, Hanna-Barbera and Marvel had an accounting dispute over sales figures and parted ways. The American line ended, and those two treasuries were never published. So there are two complete treasuries that are just sitting in a drawer somewhere that will never see the light of day, or certainly never saw the light of day as treasuries. That kind of stuff breaks my heart. When that material is put together and then just put in a drawer, and now it's sitting in some dusty office somewhere, that, especially a Scooby-Doo Halloween special. Yeah. Ah!
Well, and the really horrible thing about this is, because Disney owns Marvel and Warner Brothers owns Hanna-Barbera, I can't imagine that these are ever, like, even if they would find them in a drawer, I can't imagine that both of them are gonna, you know, be nice to each other and split the profits 50-50 and put them out.
Yeah. There's probably, what, like 80 pages of artwork that will never see the light of day. And, you know, again, probably Scooby-Doo, probably drawn by Dan Spiegel, which was great. But, yeah, that breaks my – when I got to that final paragraph, I was like, oh man. I mean, because all those guys got paid. They got paid for that work, and Marvel just ate it. You know, he just ate it and sent it to drawer. So this is it for the Marvel / Hanna-Barbera Treasury Editions. I mean, I mentioned this on the show I did with Chris Franklin. I didn't even know these existed. I never saw these on the newsstand. Did you remember ever seeing any of these on a newsstand when you were a kid?
I remember the, like, the, I guess, monthly or bi-monthly Laugh Olympics comic book, but not the treasuries, not the Hanna-Barbera treasuries.
Yeah, I never saw these. I mean, I'm going to assume that I I'm not going to bug Mark ever here about this. I am sort of fascinated as why Marvel would even do them in treasury format. It doesn't, because I mean, I some of the artwork is quite nice. Some of it's a little looser than others, especially. And then when you realize the book was done in 3 weeks, you can't be too critical of, you know, some of the details that they, you know, some of the artwork's a little loose. Some of it's a little better than others. I mean, again, done in 3 weeks. That's just ridiculous. I always wonder, like, why would they do these in a treasury format? It makes me think, well, the Hanna-Barbera characters were certainly pretty famous. You could probably get these in department stores, and therefore you had a chance at a wider audience than, say, you know, the Astonishing Spider-Man or something, because every kid knew these characters. So maybe these were aimed at less newsstand distribution and maybe in other places like Woolworths or you know, any sort of department stores, but I certainly never saw them.
Well, and two, we forget, because of the age we live in with comic book shops and the internet and everything, probably any place that stocked kids' items for sale could theoretically have this book on a stand somewhere for it to be sold.
Yep.
So like a kid's toy, like toy stores or even like a kid's clothing store or something like that. Like any place that sells kids' items could have this for them to buy.
Yeah, they used it DC at least. I don't know if Marvel did. Well, no, wait a minute. I'll take it back. They did it too. Marvel and DC would distribute display boxes for certain treasuries. There's a Star Wars display box that I've seen on eBay. Unlike you, I didn't leave a party to try and get it, but I actually did try and bid on it once, and the price was, because Star Wars fans want it more than comics fans, so the price is astronomical to get it, but it does exist. So yeah, so we, and then we know that DC did them too. There are pictures of these treasury display, again, another item I would kill to own, you know, one of those treasury. I can't, part of me is like, can they possibly still exist? But everything seems to still exist somewhere. So I keep thinking someday on eBay, I'll find somebody selling one of these things. But no, I mean, these items with their price points, I mean, these books, the Laugh Olympics is $1.25. The price point was higher than the average comic book. And so therefore the news vendor or whoever was selling them got a better return for their money for display, you know, display space. So yeah, comics like this would be on sale in places that you would normally not think to see them. So yeah, they were probably around in places that they knew kids would congregate. Even if they didn't sell normal comics, they would sell these. So I have to wonder, maybe there was like a Hanna-Barbera display sent out with these things or something. obviously, you know, if they were going to rush Mark Evanier and crew to get this done in 3 weeks, I mean, that they probably had to pay extra fast rush rates. So obviously they thought there was something to these books. Again, it's just a darn shame that they never did any more of them, because again, the more treasuries that exist, the happier I am. But overall, except Chris and I reviewed the Christmas special with the Flintstones. I thought that was okay. I've never been a big fan of the Flintstones, so I was just kind of like, all right. But this one I really, really thought was fun. It had a good plot. The characters get to do, you know, like Snooper and Blabber are the ones that like start the mystery, you know, which is like they all, I mean, Mark Evanier knew these characters and he loved them. And so he really gives them, most of them, a nice thing to do, which is fitting of their personalities.
Some of it could be more the voice casting from the commercial, from the shows, than the writing. But as I read this, I definitely heard the character saying these words, just right. like Augie Doggy and Doggy Daddy. I mean, those definitely are written in the voice of the character. Absolutely.
Oh, I love it at the end when when the Thursday night movie comes back on, and I like Snagglepuss is like, heavens to Murgatroyd, I've seen this one already.
Yeah, exactly.
By the way, I love the detail that on the wall behind him is a picture of himself. I just love that. He's got a picture of himself up on the, screen. As we're wrapping up here, just as I'm curious about the, because of course Hanna-Barbera is back in comic book form under DC. Have you been reading any of these sort of like new takes on the Hanna-Barbera characters? Have you enjoyed any of those?
I haven't, because I'm just so, I guess, gun shy of DC. I'm afraid they're going to ruin these characters by, I don't know. They're going to make, I don't know, like Augie Doggy and Doggy Daddy. They probably have family issues, or like, if I knew someone and they said, oh, these are great, read them, I would give it a try. I would get it from my local public library, which I wholeheartedly endorse. So I would try it if I heard great things about them. Have you tried them? Are you going to recommend anything?
I have not either, but I have heard a lot of good things. I have heard really good things about the Flintstones one, and then the Snagglepuss one. People have said the Snagglepuss one, which I believe is written by Mark Russell. Who wrote the Wonder Twins. That is really good. So you mean, yeah, I mean, like, part of it is just I've aged out of this, you know. I mean, I'm like, you know, I'm an old man now, and it's like, I just, this is not my thing. But I've heard that these were actually pretty charming, and even though they were kind of new takes on these characters, they were kind of in the spirit of it, and they weren't kind of like trying to, like, you know, they weren't like those awful robotic versions of like the Warner Brothers characters from a few years ago, making them rad. You know, they weren't doing that. Like, it was more charming. So reading, I really did enjoy this treasury. I thought it was a fun story. Mm-hmm. It moves at a great pace. You know, there's some soft spots here and there, but overall it's a fun comic. And so now I'm a little more willing to maybe go look at those, what DC was doing with the Hanna-Barbera characters, than I would have been, because like, oh, okay, you can actually write a story that has somewhat of a superhero drive to it, but with these characters. So yeah, I'm a little more interested than I would have been before.
I definitely read the comments for the show. So if listeners have great suggestions and let me know why you liked it, I definitely will read it. I'll read your comment and then probably read the book.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds, you know, I mean, they're probably all available on the DC Universe app and stuff. Yeah, also by the Snagglepuss Chronicles, written by Mark Russell. So yeah, and Mark Russell's a great writer.
I was gonna say, based on Wonder Twins, that's enough to get me.
Yeah, I got. We'll have to give that a shot. So okay, maybe we'll do an episode of. We'll go back. You and I will go and read these comics, and then we'll come back for like an FW Presents, and we can talk about the Hanna-Barbera comics or something. Because, you know,
I'm definitely.
That's it. You got to. I don't know if you've been on FW Presents yet. We got to get you on that show too.
Oh, I don't think I have. Before we go, there is something I am morally, legally, ethically obligated to talk about, because this is a Hanna-Barbera topic. My first trip to Universal Studios in 1994, I went on a ride called The Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera. Mm-hmm. And it's like a motion simulator ride. And it's really similar to this book, because you have Yogi Bear, you have Elroy Jetson, you have Scooby-Doo, you have the Flintstones, and it's like a really, really fun multi-character adventure, and it is on YouTube. So I definitely recommend people look, I guess probably look up Universal Studios, Fantastic World of Hanna-Barbera. It's a really, really great, I don't know, like 8-10 minute film.
Wow.
It's really fun.
That's really cool. I will have to check that out.
It's neat.
I'm done here.
Now, it's not there anymore. It was first replaced by like Nicktoons. And now it's Despicable Me, which I do like the Despicable Me one.
Okay. Wow. These characters are eternal. You know, they haven't really been on television in several decades, but they're still out there. So that's great. That's really cool, Sean. I will have to check that out. That sounds like really interesting. So, well, Sean, you've now been on Treasury Cast. So you can check that show off. So one final thing I'm going to mention before I cut to some commercials and I'll be back with some listener feedback. I was going through my Treasury collection on my shelf here, and I was pulled out the Laugh Olympics comic to read it. In preparation for the show. Somehow, I have no memory of this, but somehow I have two copies of this book. Ooh. I have no idea how I ended up with two copies of Laugh Olympics, but I have two. So if you're listening to this, everybody, and you're interested in this comic, and maybe for yourself or your child, if you have a child that loves these characters, I'm going to be running a contest. So if you're listening to this and you would like to win one of my copies, because I don't need two. You could argue I don't need one, but I definitely don't need two. If you would like one of my copies, leave a comment on this episode over on our website, findwaterpodcast.com, and I will pick one commenter at random to receive this comic. I will send it in the mail to you. So if you enjoyed this episode and you want to read this Laugh Olympics comic, because it's certainly not available in digital format anywhere, I will send it to you. So leave a comment on our website, findwaterpodcast.com, with this episode, for this episode, and I will pick one random winner. And like I said, maybe you'll become a Laugh Olympics fan too. So Sean, thank you once again. You know I always enjoy talking to you no matter what show we're talking about. So thank you so much for doing this. I very much appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Rob.
All right. So why don't you tell people where they can find you out on the internet?
Find me. I'm an old man, so I am on Facebook under Sean M. Myers.
You look great, though, Sean.
it's the picture of Dorian Gray right there. That's basically it, although I comment on every episode of For All Mankind, because that is my favorite Fire and Water podcast network show. I love that, so I'm always in that comment section and other comment sections around the network.
Absolutely. So, all right. Well, thanks so much, Sean. Again, it was great talking to you. So, all right, everybody, stay tuned. I'm going to play some podcast promos. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
Welcome, one and all, to the Fire and Water Racetrack and Arena. Please direct your attention to the center of the track, where you will see 36 buses lined up between two ramps, a tank full of live man-eating sharks, and a high wire stretching over it all. The rocket cycle is warmed up and all the nets have been removed. Who would attempt these stunts just to entertain and inspire his audience? What kind of man? What kind of hero? There, coming in on a rocket-powered skateboard, it's the death-defying human Flycast! Join me, Max Romero, and a rotating roster of guests as we dive headfirst into the colorful comics of Marvel's The Human Fly. The Death-Defying Human Flycast is a limited episode podcast spotlighting the adventures of a man who comes back from a crippling auto accident to become a mysteriously masked stuntman with a mission to inspire others to never give up hope. We'll also talk about the real-life human fly, a daredevil with a murky past and a desire to be the best stuntman in history, until the day he just disappeared. The actual human fly would vanish as suddenly as he had materialized, but not before sparking a comic series featuring what would be the wildest superhero ever, because he was real. The Death-Defying Human Flycast, coming soon to the Fire and Water Podcast Network. It's gonna be wild.
There's something like 115,000 English language podcasts in the world, and no doubt hundreds of them are aimed at the comic book genre.
There are sci-fi comic podcasts.
Horror comic podcasts.
War comic podcasts!
But do you know what we need?
Two guys crazy enough to combine those fields and make a podcast of their very own?
Yes. It's the answer to a question no one asked, so that's why we are answering it. Such a gaping hole in the podcast landscape must be filled post-haste.
Did you really just use the word post-haste?
The Weird Warriors podcast covers the Weird War Tales comic book series published by DC Comics from 1971 to 1983. Along the way, we'll also check out other horror and war comics published by DC, Marvel, Charlton, and any other targets that may present themselves to us.
I have the war books, and he has the horror books. So if you're ready to take a nice, relaxing look at the hell of war in comic book form from the age of the caveman to the distant future, then report for duty by subscribing to the Weird Warrior Podcast, brought to you by the Brothers Spleen, wherever fine podcasting provisions are issued.
Vampires!
Aliens!
Dinosaurs!
Alien dinosaurs!
There's something for everyone.
General Sherman said war is hell, but do you know what else is?
Weird.
For our purposes, yes. So tune in to the Weird Warrior Podcast today. Do it! That's an order!
Yes, sir!
Don't call me sir, I work for a living.
But we're not getting paid for this.
Dang!
Well, I'm Max.
And I'm Rich.
And we're going to be bringing you the Weird Warriors Podcast, where we will promise to make war
no more.
And we're back with listener feedback, and this is the feedback we got from the previous episode of Treasury Cast, episode 59, where we talked about limited collector's edition Superman with my guest Henry Bernstein. So the comments from the website, let's get right to them. First up is Rob McCarthy, who says, of course Clark is important. Superman is just a way for a crime reporter to get out of trouble. Just like Captain Marvel isn't Billy Batson, he's a genie that gets a kid out of trouble. Interesting observation, Rob. Thank you. Edo Boznar says, oh yeah, another excellent Treasury Cast. And Henry was a wonderful guest. I guess that's why he gets honored with his own day here at the Fire and Water Network. And to Henry, I'll just back what Rob said about people, or rather kids, coming up, cutting up comics. Heavy sigh. Yes, there were those of us who did such things quite extensively. I did it pretty regularly in roughly the first 2 years that I read comics. So from about ages 6 through 8, I stopped rather abruptly when something just clicked in my head and I realized I couldn't go back and reread the comics I had mutilated. However, although I had a few DC treasuries with the tabletop diorama on the back covers, I never attempted to make one, nor did I otherwise cut up any of my treasury books. Otherwise, to answer a question you posed in the show, that excellent cover image was reused for a later paperback edition of Tom DeHaven's It's Superman. That's the copy I have. That's great. I didn't know that, Ado. Thank you. Matt Soroy says, it's always fun to explore the wide and wonderful world of Superman. There was so much Superman content by the 70s, it's easy to understand why he had so many treasuries. Boy, do I wish I lived in a world where that Superman theme park existed. Henry was a fun and engaging guest, whose love of Superman is evident and infectious. I feel a little sorry for him, having been born in 1982. By the time he was 10, everything was a collectible. Don't touch it, read it, or look at it. Sorry, I know that's hyperbole, but I too cut up my comics as a youngster. I'd rearrange the panels to tell my own stories and tear off the covers and pin them up on my bedroom walls. It wasn't until I was 10 or 11 that I started collecting comics, and even then it was just to build a library of comics that I enjoyed to keep and reread. Thanks for another great episode, and I hope Henry returns for more Superman content. Thank you, Matt. And yes, I would love to have Henry back on any of our shows to talk about Superman stuff. Like, as I said on the show, he's such a wonderful advocate for the Man of Steel. It's really fun to have him on to talk about that. Clint Robinson says, now you've got me wondering if there's something I can send into your podcast so I could possibly win a war bond or a punch a Nazi flipbook like those kids who tore up Action Comics number one. So thanks for those strange 3 a.m. thoughts, Rob. You're welcome, Clint. Gus Casals says, what a wonderful guest Henry is. Like Rob, I find his love of soups contagious, and I really like his younger fan discovering the roots feel to this experience. And don't get me started on the comics are not toys debate. I've had in my possession comics that have been cut, drawn, traced, had stickers on them, and have been used as silly putty models. Still, cherish them as much as my archive editions, where I finally got to read and appreciate the otherwise compromised art. Chuck Galetta sends us a link. He says, there is a Warner Brothers World theme park in Dubai, if only if it were within my driving distance. And he sent some YouTube links. I checked that video out. It looks pretty cool. Again, why not here in America? Maybe they're more, the Warner Brothers characters, like, a little more popular in Dubai or something. But yeah, it's a darn shame that we don't have something like that here. Dr. Ann says, one of the tragedies I've always tried to spy in the wild to pick up. As you say, that cover is a thing of beauty. And how interesting to see such a mix of pure Superman artists. Siegel, Boring, Plastino, Schaffenberger, and Swan. I mean, talk about a murderer's row. I can remember in high school, I lent a bunch of Kimiko's Robotech comics to a fellow fan. When he returned them, he had cut out coupons in a bunch of them to send off for the models offered in the back. He wasn't a comic guy, so I suppose I should have informed him better that he wasn't meant to do that. Anyways, he never got any more comics from me. Instead, I told him where to find the comic store. Thanks for covering. And that's a very kind and gentle reaction. I don't know if I would have been quite that nice about it. Or maybe you weren't nice and you left that part out. I don't know. But wow, yeah, that's ballsy to cut up a friend's comic that he's lending you. I wonder if he got the models. Chris Franklin from our network says, fun show, guys. You give Rob hell for those Superman comments, Henry. Hey, Chris. I love this cover. I own this treasury, and I was so happy to get it about 15 years ago. To me, this is the portrait of the Earth 2 Superman. That's how my brain works. The Golden Age Superman will always be Earth 2 Superman, Daily Star shenanigans aside. This cover has a similar feel to the Lowther book, but that cover has Superman leaping tall buildings. I don't have an original of that one, but I do have the reprint from about 20 years ago. The art in that book, both painted and pencil and ink, was supposedly all done by Schuster, but I suspect his studio may have been involved as well. Oh, and that classic art of Superman that was on the 30s and the 70s cover and that Kryptonite Rock ad, believe it or not, that's very early Kurt Swan work and comes from the cover of Superman 3D number 1 back in 1953. I didn't know that, Chris. Thank you. I do think these concept drawings by Adams were indeed developed for the proposed Superman Park in Metropolis, Illinois, but I have to agree they were kind of pipe dreaming it here. I think they could do this now, but I doubt we'd see a land dedicated to Superman alone. It's too bad DC didn't go along with Universal's proposal for a DC land at their then-in-development Islands of Adventure Park in Orlando, which eventually became Marvel-themed. We could have gotten a DC park vastly superior to the rather tepid offering Six Flags has given us, and Disney World would have been able to give us East Coasters in Avengers Campus and other Marvel-themed rides as well. Yeah, that is a shame. Yeah, that I mean, not having kids, I'm not really like a big theme park person anymore. But man, if there was a DC kind of adventure park, I don't know if I would have been able to resist that. I mean, that would have been so cool. Captain Entropy says, great episode, man. Henry was a fine guest and his other productions sound fascinating. Other thoughts. One, I haven't bought a newly produced Superman comic since Action Number 1000, which is absolutely superb, by the way. I had bought one for a year or three before that. But assuming it happens someday, if someone will please tell me the issue where Lois has to meet with HR about the way she talks to Clark, I will buy it. No complaints and no questions asked. Thank you. Rob said, I didn't cut up my comics because I was lazy. Preach, brother. Who did those comics editors think they were, assigning me extracurricular homework? I had Cub Scouts for that anyway. Like Henry, when I really did need to cut something out of a comic, say for a contest, I took advantage of the fact that Mom had access to a color printer, and you could paste copies of these diorama pages on better cardboard. I remember someone, probably Mom, telling me that I was thinking about making one. The feeling probably passed without incident. Thank you, Captain. Martin Gray says, thanks for another terrific show. I really enjoyed Henry's opinions and insights. I don't have this issue, but it's an odd fish, isn't it? A few Golden Age stories and a couple of cracker Silver Age stories. And not one supervillain. Did you think that was to go with the radio show vibe of the cover? I don't know. It all seems so random. The case of the Lethal Letters and the Crypto Story are the only ones I've read previously. Both are fun, but prestigious collection worthy. I do have a soft spot for Ross Andrews Superman, and I can bore for Britain when it comes to Kurt Schavenberger mind. So I'm never not pleased to see their work. You know, and Martin, it didn't even occur to me until you just said it that there are no supervillains in that collection. It just never occurred to me. And it's interesting because then when DC started doing the digests, Superman got a lot of digests, and they would do theme collections, and one was like his villains. So it's funny that DC didn't do that. They didn't do theme treasuries for Superman, considering how many treasures he would eventually get. But yeah, it didn't even occur to me until I read your comment that there's no supervillains, really, no Luthor, no Brainiac, no nothing in the entire collection. That's interesting. And then finally, Mike Gillis says, I would love to visit a Superman theme park. But when you mentioned a Batman land, that gave me pause. Because if you truly built a park that had Disney levels of immersion to look and feel like Gotham City, it might actually be upsetting. The first theme park, you constantly feel like you're going to get mugged. Yeah, that we could, I don't know. Do you want to send, kids down Crime Alley? I don't know. Maybe some kids would like their parents to go down there. Anyway, on that dark note, we're wrapping up the feedback here for Treasure Cast number 59, again with Henry Bernstein. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Big thanks to Sean Myers for coming by and talking Laugh Olympics with me. I'm enjoying the Olympics very much, and I thought it was just kind of fun to talk about something Olympics-related for this episode of Treasure Cast. So two notes before we sign off here. First of all, I'm going to remind you all about the contest. If you would like a copy of the Marvel Laugh Olympics comic, just leave a comment and indicate that you are submitting yourself for the contest, and I will pick one random winner, and I will send you the comic. I think you'd be fun to do. There's no reason for me to own two copies, so I'd like to have another one out in the world. And then the other thing I want to mention is I'm going on vacation next month, the first vacation I have taken since we got hit by COVID. So there is not going to be a Treasury Cast next month. I'm going to take the month off. We will be back in September with one of the most savage treasuries ever printed. And that is all I will say for now. So it's a no show next month, but we'll be back in September. So that's going to do it for this episode of Treasury Cash. You can find all the back episodes on our show on our website, findwaterpodcast.com. You can subscribe to Treasury Cast on any podcatcher of your choice. And then finally, if you want to support the Find Water Podcast Network, go to patreon.com/FW podcast. And there you can unlock various rewards, one of which is to be name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Jeff Pollier for his support of Treasury Cast. I very much appreciate it. Again, thanks everybody for listening. Thanks for Sean for stopping by. We will see you in September. But until then, go big or go home.